Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Health and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. It is a wonderful day here in the Deep South. We are live on Sedona Talk Radio and Blog Talk Radio. However, today I'm in New Orleans in the Deep South, and it is end of October, and don't you know we're going to have one, and I say one, cool day in the month of October. We are under the 80 degrees. And tomorrow, I am told, we will be right back up where we usually are, which is in the mid-80s. Can you believe it? Oh, my goodness, I'm longing for some colored leaves and some snow. But I don't think we'll get to see that here. So we're going to have a great show today. We're going to be talking about optimism. Ah, see, I had optimism. I'm wondering about snow and leaves that I'm never going to get. So maybe my guest today, David, can tell me how I can have contagious optimism to see some leaves and snow. But at any rate, we're going to have a great show. We're going to be talking about how, in light of everything that's going on in the world today, can we get up the next day and say, it is a great day. You know, so many people, they're barely out of bed and they've got their televisions that are programmed to start up with the news, or their radio turns on and it's got some kind of news blaring out of it, or they don't even put their feet to the floor and they've already on their Facebook checking out all the headlines. What kind of day do you think they might have? You know, I've challenged this to many clients before, and I've said, before you even put on your reading glasses, before you even touch anything electronic, put your feet on the floor. Stand up straight. Give yourself, put your arms up to the ceiling and bring them back down and say, it's going to be a great day. And then move on to your day and see what kind of day you're going to have. Do you think you could do that for a challenge of maybe the next week? Maybe how about the next 2 days? Some people can't even do it for 2 days. So we're going to be talking about how can you approach life and work and challenges and everything that's going on to be able to say this is a great adventure we're on. This is a really great world we're in. We don't always have to believe that everything that is dumped on our plate is a negative thing. We may experience it as such, but then we could say, you know what, but I'm going to choose something different. We all do have free will, and that's very important. My guest today is David Mezepel. He is the author of Contagious Optimism. In its uplifting stories and motivational advice for positive forward thinking. This is really going to be great because he's going to share his own contagious optimism stories on today's show. And he's going to be saying things that you may have heard before, and maybe we need to keep hearing them, because apparently if we're still listening to them and they drew our attention, I guess we didn't learn the lesson. So David is here to share that with us. Thank you so much for joining us today, David. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate being here. I love your show.
Thanks. And isn't it great? We're going to have optimism for snow and leaves. What do you think?
Yes. We're going to be so positive. It's going to start snowing there in about an hour.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I'll take it but once. You know, hey, what can you say?
Absolutely.
So David, you know, I think your book is really great. Like I said, I read every single book. And it's so funny. I've had guests come on the show and they've said, did you read my book? It was sort of like, really? I fold down the pages, I tuck in the pages, I highlight, I write. And people have come after me with my book and they're like, oh my goodness, you know, you spent some time on this.
And it's so nice. It's actually refreshing. It's refreshing to hear that.
And you know what I think is really great, though, about your book is you can open it up to any single page, because it's not something you have to read from front to back to be able to say, oh, I didn't get the gist of it. You know, you could open it up and you could see an insight. You could turn around and see a story. You could look on the other page and you could see an action. So I think almost no matter where you open it up is something to give you, you know, just 10, 15, 20 seconds, read it, and maybe take that for the day, don't you think?
Exactly. And I think that's one of the reasons why from the day that first book of ours was published to within a month we had landed bestseller status is because people love the short stories that pick it up, put it down, especially in a topic like optimism and real stories. So it's I love the format, and all our books are that way.
You know, I think it's so important to be able to have something said a different way. I mean, like I've said before in the beginning of the show, how many times do we have to say it till we'll get it or be able to say, I've already done that or I'm past that or I'm through that or whatever it is. But a lot of people need a lot of different ways to hear something, don't you think?
Oh, there's no question. They really do. when a lot of times people don't realize how good their life is, but when they hear stories about how others have persevered, it really makes a difference. And that's along the lines of what you're saying. And you need to read those stories or hear about them to make you appreciate things. I agree with you.
You know, and just for just what you were saying just now, I had watched a show recently, and it was a bunch of couples on it. And one girl had revealed something very deep and dark in her past, and it was life-changing for her. And another girl was saying, oh, well, my life was really great. You know, I got everything coming to me all the time, and then this little kink, and I didn't get what I wanted. And everybody kind of looked at them, and it was like, you know, as my husband would say, she's got a brain for a bag of rocks, you know.
Right.
So here was one person who was really delved and had gotten into the deepness of her soul and her spirit, which is really a great place to be, although it doesn't feel as comfortable. And then another person who says, I'm just living that outside life, and how materialistic is my life. So I think that those are two contrasts where a lot of people are living these days in either one of those.
Correct. That's absolutely correct. I mean, sometimes a lot of people get caught up in what the problems are, what they're lacking, or in the material, like you just mentioned, and they don't really get past that until something catastrophic happens to them. And then they start, once something unfortunately happens catastrophic, then they start turning into themselves, becoming more spiritual, or looking to others, whether it's support groups or books or something. It just, everybody's different that way. But yes, today especially, there's a huge propensity towards materialism and keeping up with the Joneses, and it's definitely a problem. But I also think there's a revolution in optimism, and people are starting to look for either how to be positive or maintain optimism in their lives, and it's really refreshing to see that. We're seeing it both through our readers, through our live events, and even through television. We're just seeing so many people really psyched about finding positivity in their own lives and in others.
You know, and I think if we look back through history, you would have the world wars or whatever. Let's say, example, you know, around World War II. I'm not much on history, so please, you feel free to correct me at any time. But after the war, you know, everybody, they didn't have anything during the war. They felt they gave so much of themselves. But then after that, they were really looking for material things. I mean, if you look at the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, how high can you go? And it was all about, what was the 80s? It was the I generation, me, 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 me. And,
right.
You know, I think we kind of got to the top of the tower, and we look at the 90s and the 2000s, and all of a sudden, our tower, a tsunami came along and washed us out. So maybe that was a real example of how your outside materialistic ventures have just made problems with yourself or with the world around you, and how we really have to start paying attention, you know, and enjoy the simpler things of life. I mean, if you look at California and the drought, I mean, how thankful would they be for rain? And that
seems
so, you know, how that seems so simple. I know they're not asking for $1 million; they're asking for rain, you know.
Yeah, I've been working out there the last 6 months, pretty much almost full time, and it's extremely dry, and yes, they're dying for that. Along the lines of what you just said, you know, one of the big things that seems to be a common denominator in terms of materialism and not looking past material items is the fact that the media glamorizes it glamorizes the lives of the rich and famous. It glamorizes the supermodels and the athletes and celebrities. It glamorizes them so much that it forces us to go out to try to be like them, whether it's through their ads for clothing, jewelry, perfume, cars, whatever. So young people especially, who are more impressionable, they feel they have to, that's how they have to be, because it's all they're seeing is that's the norm. And it's really a shame. And because the technology revolution, of course, has its pros and cons, but in terms of how fast now we're seeing the lifestyles of these people, it's making other people want to be like them at the cost of home equity loans and second and third loans. And it's crazy. It's just crazy.
Right.
Something's going to have to change.
And that doesn't give you optimism. And I think optimism is something more in your inner core. I don't think it's, as we've said, about material things. I don't think it is outward expression of your material goods, or you don't be optimistic that you're going to get a brand new Ferrari. You're going to be optimistic that you're going to have a 10-bedroom house. You're going to be optimistic that tomorrow you're going to be able to put your feet on the floor and stand up straight. You're going to be optimistic
exactly.
that, you know, your children's health will they will survive, or you're optimistic that you will have a job to go to tomorrow. You'll be optimistic that your kids will graduate high school. I think when we realize that our goals and those things that are important in life need to be our first, I guess what I would call platinum goals versus all those other, extras.
You hit it on the head. As a matter of fact, I always say when I speak, I always say to people, you know, don't worry, I'm not a pie-in-the-sky optimist who says, mm-hmm. close your eyes and that pot
right.
of gold or that relationship will appear. I'm the opposite. I actually say that true success happens when you combine effort, reality, and positive thinking. If you're just an optimist and nothing else, you're in the clouds. And if you're just mm-hmm. a realist and nothing else, you probably won't get past first base. But when you combine those elements, and if you look at our forefathers and the industrialists, they all combined. They were realists, but they were positive about what they were doing, and they put in the effort. And that's what I believe separates me and my team and our mission from a lot of the other optimism people out there, people purporting how to be positive.
And I think, too, you have to be super careful when experts or gurus, as I call them, whatever they might be, they will say, I have found the golden way, follow and line up behind me. You know,
exactly.
And then everyone lines up behind them, and then when they get to the end of the pot of the gold, at the end of the road, it's actually a basket of yarn, and people are saying, "Oh my goodness, you didn't show us the pot of the gold," you know, and then they're naysayers, and you've got all kinds of finger pointing. But then also too, you have to think, you know, people have to be responsible for their choices too. You know, when we say about being optimism or optimistic, you have to be optimistic for yourself and for your own life, for what your core beliefs are, and it doesn't have to be about the other 10 people behind you or the other 100 people behind you in a row. It's all about individuality also.
Correct. See, we don't like, and I agree with you, and we don't go out preaching how to be optimistic. We just
right.
basically, we have a belief that when people are going through tough times, they tend to think they're alone. But when they hear
mm-hmm.
stories of how others have persevered, it gives them hope.
Yeah.
And hope is that foundation of optimism. So our whole thing is compiling stories and what we've learned from those stories. Like, what are the common denominators in all these stories
right.
that help people persevere? And that is very important because it's real. It's real, real, real. It's not this, like, you just hit it on the head. You know, follow me. I'm going to teach you how to. No, it doesn't work that way
yeah.
at all.
But, you know, so many people are tied up in that right now, and I think what really the driving force is called fear, is it not?
Correct. Exactly. People are pulling any direction they can to get out of whatever hole they're in, and they're anything they find that they think gives them hope. Like I said, the pie-in-the-sky optimists appeal to a lot of people, and they take it far. But, you know, really quick, I want to, before I forget something, you said something earlier in your intro that I really loved, and I'd like to touch on it real quick.
Go ahead.
You said before about waking up, and before you turn on that smartphone or that computer,
yeah.
just put your feet on the ground and live a little bit. You know, it's so true. Lately, because I've been on the road so much, I try to do a lot of my communication in the morning early when I wake up before I start my day. And I find that what happens is if I start communicating from the moment I wake up, all of a sudden, the day's going by, and I haven't gotten done what I need, and I'm all wired up. I'm trying to get in the habit of not turning anything on until I get my exercise in and breathe a little bit. You said
yeah.
it so well. I've never heard anybody else say it. It's so nice to
mm-hmm.
hear.
Well, you know, when I find that What I always say to them, too, is that people say, well, I have to reach for my glasses. I said, put your feet on the floor. That means you're grounded to the earth. Raise your arms to the sky to believe that you still believe in something greater than yourself. And breathe in, because that's the nature of life. You still have, you still are here, and you're still on earth. And those three things are so vitally important to people. If they just recognize those, how can your day be any worse? Your day can only be much better.
That, you have to email me that, because I need to make that one of our daily motivations. And I'll quote you, of course. That's really good.
Fabulous. Well, you know, I think it's so important because they rush through things. I mean, I can say, look, I'm no guru and I'm no expert either. I mean, I'm almost 60. I had four kids. I was a single parent, two ex-husbands, you know, three college degrees. I'm a dental hygienist, a naturopathic physician, you know. I did everything. I've lived in maybe 10, 15 states, who knows. I've done a lot of things. And there have been times in my life when before my eyes even opened in the morning, I was going down my schedule in my head. And, you know, my kids used to always laugh at me because if anybody knows these daytimer black ones, black calendars, you know, the big ones that are 8.5 by 11, well, a whole page, right, and a whole page would be like for one day. Well, I was still stapling in yellow lined legal pad. I had so much to do for each day. You know, I have some I can go back in like in the 80s and the 90s, and I'm going, I have 3 and 4 pages of stuff to do here, plus the day in the book, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, how to get that done. But I did. But I can honestly tell you, too, do I remember those days and times? I remember by what was on the legal pad. I don't remember by otherwise. And now I was compared it, and I was just speaking on the other show. We were talking about this is, the other day, I was going somewhere early in the morning. And in the period of exactly 3 minutes, being a passenger in the car, I noticed, I looked to my right, and I saw the fog rising up from the golf course. We went a little bit farther, and I saw the ducks playing in the canal in the water to wash themselves off. And the dew was just coming over the grass and stuff. And then we stopped for gas, and I looked to my right. Within 5 seconds, a woman was sitting in her car crying. Now, I noticed the world. The person who was with me, and I asked the same question, what did you notice in the past 3 minutes? And I said mine, and he said his, and he says, all I can tell you is that lady that was cutting me off on the corner. So, what kind of world do you want to live in, right?
Right.
Do you want to live in the world in which you're reactive and, you know, everything is going on outside of you? Or do you want to notice the other parts of the world that are more important? My goodness, to see that fog coming up on the golf course, I could still close my eyes and see that. Now, the other person, do you think you could still close your eyes and see the person that cut you off? It's like it doesn't faze you. You have no connection to the earth and the world around you. And I think when you talk about a lot of your stories in your book and you say things happen that bring you back to a sense of yourself, that's really what I'm talking about, is how can you come back to yourself, because it's so vitally important.
Exactly right. That's very, very true. Someone that I know well, she has a really bad habit, similar to what you're talking about, where I could talk to her in the morning and say, hey, look how nice it is today. It's awesome. Look at all these palm trees or whatever. And her response is, yeah, but it's going to be so humid. Oh, my hair is going to this. I'm like, come on.
I know.
That's psych.
And you just wonder what it. And you know what, I have worked with a lot of end-of-life clients, and I think this is about optimism too, because when people face a lot of really critical health concerns, they tend to go inside themselves and find out what's more important to them, and some will take things to their grave and they'll just go just as miserable as the day they ever lived, you know? But you think about it and you say, and I will say to every new client, the first question out of my mouth is what is important about you that you would put on your stone? How would you like people to remember you? And, you know, there was someone that had passed by, passed on the other day, and on the news they said, oh, well, oh, goodness, I can't remember the exact words, but it was, oh, he used to be such a good representation of this, that, or the other. And I'm thinking that is such a material thing, you know, and you know, being optimistic is creating your inner spirit. Isn't that really what you're trying to get over on your book? Because you're not really saying be optimistic about your Ferrari.
Correct. That's exactly right. What we're doing is we're showing the world that people that have been through different themes in life, whether it's relationships, sports, business, health, aging, loss, whatever situation they've been in, they've come through on the sunny side. Either they found optimism in their through the perseverance, through the adversity, or they had it all along. But these silver lining stories give people hope because it shows they're not alone. So say for example, I was going through a horrible divorce, and I'm like, oh my God, this was terrible. Well, if I read 15 stories in our divorce chapter about different scenarios similar to mine, well, it makes me feel better knowing that they persevered and that I could potentially emulate them. And what's interesting is we have an essay bank with thousands and thousands of stories. They're always coming in. And we did the first book, which you have. Our next one's coming out at the end of the year. We're going to do a book a year amongst other things like live events. But one of the things we've noticed through all these stories and through all this perseverance, there's five common themes that help people find or maintain optimism. Do you want me to recite them for you?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so the first is gratitude. And it's you have to be grateful for even the smallest, tiniest things. Whether it's, like you said, waking up in the morning and seeing the sunlight or that glass of water or that toothbrush or your coffee. Just be grateful for the smallest things. That makes everything else that much better. The second one is stories. You need to hear or read stories of how others have persevered because it spreads a message of hope. Never discount stories, memories of yours or other people's, because they will help others. Somebody else somewhere has been in a similar situation as you, and your story can help them, and their story can help you. The third common denominator, very important, we call it the magnet. And the reason we say magnet is it's from the quote from Mary Lou Retton, the gymnast. She said, I quote, "Optimism is a happiness magnet," end quote. Mm-hmm. And what that means is very true. You need to be around positive, uplifting people as much as you possibly can, because they'll bring you up. Because conversely, the negative people is also magnetic, and they'll try their best to drag you down, even if they don't realize it. And they might be in your workplace, they might be in your dorm or your school, so they're hard to get away from. Just ignore their chatter because they're just negative. The fourth is reflection. And that means basically what people do or say in general is a reflection of their own reality, not yours. So don't take stuff to heart that people say or do, because it's their own reality that they're looking at. And the last, and very important as well, is altruism. You need to give back. It doesn't have to always be money. It can be time, talent, or treasure. Just helping others in some way is very powerful for finding or maintaining optimism in your life. Because like you said before, there's something much greater than us out there. And if you have that belief and you help others, you're helping them maintain that belief as well. And that's the five things that all our stories seem to have.
You know, it's so interesting you say about giving back. My daughter works in the emergency room, you know, every single day, and she's in her early 20s. And one day she says to me, she was Googling on her phone, but she was talking to me on the phone. She said, I'm trying to find this certain program at the new hospital I'm going to work at. And I said, well, what is it? She said, it's the Cuddle program. She said, every hospital I work in, which is her sixth one now this year, she says, every hospital I work in, I always go up to the NICU and volunteer to cuddle, and that you sit there with the newborns. And I'm thinking,
wow.
You know, she sees life and death every day, and how that is such a stark contrast of giving back in both realms, you know, and it is just how she sees it. And, you know, but we also have to think, too, I think the younger people are so much more aware in being able to take care of the world and the earth than I think we are in our 40s, 50s, and 60s due to what was going on in history at our time. And then you look at the older people of their 90s and 100s, and they have a totally different outlook, too. So when you look at these younger people who are saying these things, you know, parents say, oh, but you're not this, you're not that, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. It's really not about it. They really have a secure grasp on the world and how it should be.
Yes, I've definitely noticed that. They definitely have a more of a altruistic attitude in general. They're definitely more concerned about longevity of the earth, living green, sustainability. That's definitely hot buttons for them in their education and what they're learning. There's no question. I do find some of the younger people, they tend to be distracted more. So sometimes they need to be a little more grounded. But you know, every generation has its flaws and has its pros and cons. So, but I do love their attitude towards sustainability. And if you think about it, in this day and age, universities and colleges actually have whole majors around those topics that didn't exist when we were younger. So it's really nice to see that. It's actually terrific.
You know, and you look, you know, when I work with women or men who are in their 60s and 70s and they've got these grudges that they've been carrying forever, and I look at them and they walk in and they're hunched over and they're bent forward and they've got these scowl lines that, you know, you could draw a volcano in, you know. And you know that they're carrying so much weight of the world that they put upon themselves, and you know, you'll see other older people, and they're out skydiving or whatever they're doing, whatever, and they're not of that same frame. So we really do take upon things that we believe and the world around us and our experiences, and we tend to weigh that all down on us in maybe a negative way or however we want to, but it will weigh us down and take us out.
It's so true. As a matter of fact, recently, we wrote a story about this family going back into the 50s, and basically there was some kind of rift between two brothers. Now, the two families, they lived in the same area in Chicago. The kids grew up together. They were such close families. And then the two brothers, each with a family, they got in like a real minor disagreement over some financial thing with their mother. And this goes back, you know, almost 60 years. And this thing has festered and festered and festered. Now, the two gentlemen are dead. The children, which are all cousins, hate each other. The wives are still alive, but they don't talk at all. And I think to myself, 60 years of a riff over what was probably then maybe $800, $2,000, has turned into this, like, Hatfields and McCoys. It's such a waste.
Yeah.
You just said it. Carrying that for so long, my God.
You know, and I've seen generations and generations of people that carry that. And then we wonder why future generations don't really fare well. It's because they are imitating, you know, life imitates life. If you see that in your past generations, how are you going to shift that in your future generations? So right now, I think with this new awakening of the earth and all this other stuff that's going on in the past 10 years, I think people, we as a whole, have hit a cement wall, and we imploded is what I like to say. So we imploded in a way so that we have to make a change. We can't go on like we used to. We can't drag that bad karma. We can't drag all that crap from all those decades and years. And it's time to just, like, time to rise up. And when you say about optimism, it's, you know, find out what your core beliefs are. Find out what your talents are. Find out what makes you tick. And start fostering that instead of worrying about all that outside stuff. So can you tell us what you even think a talent might be? Nobody even knows what a talent anymore. They think it is tap dancing and, I can tie fishing lures. Really? You know? That's true.
It really is. This is a great topic you brought up, and it's amazing how powerful it is. And again, I go back to stories. I love people's stories for this exact reason, because you can read something and be like, oh my God, I cannot believe what this person did, what they went through, what they were exposed to. Because for the person themselves, they're in it. They're marinating in it for so long that they don't even realize it at first. When they finally break out from whether it's a health issue, a financial issue, or a rift with a relative or friend, and it just festers and festers, but with the right attitude and moving on, you find yourself, and it's great and refreshing to read, because a lot of people go through those things, and you need to know that others have been through it to make you realize you could emulate these outcomes as well.
So how do you find a core talent, or what to you is a talent, and how do you bring that forth in people? Because when you do hit that wall and you do implode, I can tell you, people get knocked to their knees. You know, I see people come to me, they lay flat on the floor and they say, I'm done, I'm cooked, I'm over. You know, how do I get up from here?
Well, for us, we always talk about it, you know, the element of perseverance. For some people, they need the ability to persevere more than others. It just depends on who they are, what their resources are, and what they're exposed to. But, you know, when you think about it, if I have a dream or a goal and I want to get to it, and I have the attitude, okay, there's going to be little changes along the way because little changes are normal. You can't be steadfast to your goal. You can get there, but along the way, just understand that you have to be pliable. You have to be flexible. And when you think you're at rock bottom, you need to know that others have had it worse and they've gotten to the goal you're trying to get to. And the way to do it is you have to be exposed to those people, whether it's themselves or their stories, to understand, look what this person went through. You're going through half of that and you're giving up. You could do it. You can get through it. It's all about being exposed to the stories, to people's life lessons. You know, when you think about it, the byproduct of success and the byproduct of failure is the same word. It's wisdom. You know, wisdom is a gift gained from the past that serves as the foundation of our future. So that's what you have to learn, is that there's wisdom from other people that are persevering, that have persevered the way you're trying. And that sometimes, most of the time, that gives people enough boost to just stay the course no matter how difficult.
And also, too, I think when we talk about goals, is it a goal that someone says, my goal is I want $100,000 in my bank account by December? Now, is that a realistic goal, or is that a goal of a life, or is that goal of a material thing? So when we want to think about making goals, we want to think about making a goal that will be benefiting your life, and not in a material, more or less, way, but also to think about as you go through it, it's more about the experience along the way. It's not like we make a goal, we get it tomorrow. Tomorrow we get up. The next day we're making another goal, we get to that one next day. And it's not like lining up your dominoes, and then at the day you die, you kick them on. You know,
it's about hit it on the head.
You know, I mean, people do that. You know, I have to get to this one. I have to get to this one. And they're so they have such blinders on that life passes them by along the way. And it's like, then what point is the goal when you even get there? Who cares anymore?
That's exactly right. Your passion for your goal has to be related to a product or a service that you so believe in. Money will follow suit if you're passionate about that. But the goal cannot be the money or the fame. The goal has to be to produce the product or service, whatever it may be, that you feel is beneficial. I recently interviewed Ken Langone. He was one of the founders of Home Depot, because we're doing a business edition with business silver lining stories. And I got to meet with him in New York about a month ago. And he was telling me that, and it was really great, he was telling me that people meet with him all the time, and he's a very spiritual guy, which was amazing. And he said people meet with him all the time pitching him ideas, because one of the things he does now is they run like basically an investment bank. And he said when they come in and they say, we can make X by producing this, or we can make Y by offering this, and here's how, he immediately says, you know, thank you, but no thank you. But when the person comes in and doesn't talk about money at all, just says, look, here's the need, here's how we can fill it, here's the way we can fill it, and this is what I believe the result will be, those people he listens to. And I understand why. Because if your drive is, like you just said, $100,000 by December or $1 million by December, then that's really self-serving. But if your drive is, I'm going to produce this that's going to help these people with this problem, and I do know I could buy it for this and sell it for that, that's okay, because you need to buy it for X and sell it for Y. But you're filling a need that's out there. And that should be the difference, how people look at money and entrepreneurship or wealth. I agree.
You know, and it's, I think it's gotten so incredible the way life has been lately, and I think there will be a, as I call it, I call it a meeting of Jesus, okay? So what it's going to be is, in healthcare, they're going to have an implosion there. There is going to be, something is just going to just rock that boat like nobody's business. And then people are going to say, is it all about Medicaid, Medicare, Obamacare, insurance, how much I get paid, how much I don't get paid, blah, blah, blah. All of that is going to implode. And then we're left with what really does heal your body, cure your disease, nurture your mind and spirit, and how can each person find that? And I think really all of this extra stuff outside of us worried about all of that. If I don't have insurance, I'm not going to have this and I'm not going to have that. That's a fear-running mongrel system. And really think about how can you take care of yourself, and being responsible for yourself too is a vital important in optimism, because you have to take care of yourself. You can't lay down and say I'm a victim and I'm going to be optimistic that I'm going to have that car and I'm just going to sit here and wait till it happens, you know? No, you have to be a participant. You have to engage, and you need to be able to have free will and make correct choices to be able to get along your path, right?
Exactly right. That's what I was saying. You can't. So many people depend on these, I call them pie in the sky optimists, whether it's books or DVDs, movies, and they just, you know, close your eyes and dream. You could dream all you want, but if you don't put in the effort and look at what the reality is, you're just going to keep dreaming. So it's no question what you just said is, in my opinion, very accurate.
You know, let's talk about, let's see, what do we talk about? Oops, we just talked about healing and curing. I've got that in the book. And, you know, you said in the book, I think, chapter in healing and curing, and let me see if I have it underlined. Yeah, cures are about surviving while healing is about thriving. And that's really true, because so many people, they will turn around and say, they will walk into me like as a healthcare person. They will say, my medical doctor can't fix me anymore. He said he's done with me. You need to fix me. That's it. Or people will do the same thing with their car. They'll go to the dealer. They'll go to another mechanic. They'll go somewhere else, and they'll finally walk into somebody and say, everybody said they can't fix me, fix it. Or the same thing, they'll come to your seminars, and they will say, you know, my life isn't working. I don't know what it's about, but fix it. And everybody wants a fix and a cure. But then you look at the word, the cure is just a surviving mechanism until they hit the next wall. And all that's really doing is opening up their eyes like a crack, and then you start to open them up again, you know, and each time they keep hitting these walls. And unless you really get to the core of your being, why are you here, what's important to you, and you take responsibility, is that not the same thing? You really need to find that.
Exactly. Exactly. I just opened to that chapter on healing and curing by Terry Shanks, one of our co-authors.
Mm-hmm.
And I really did love, I remember when we compiling the book, I love this essay. It's so accurate, in my opinion. Cures are about surviving, when healing is about thriving. That's exactly right.
And you know, in the chapter it says, be like Gumby, float, go with the flow, like I always like to say. So I think that's what you're trying to say, too, is you got to be able to go with the flow.
Correct. There's no question. I mean, when you think about, the fact of the matter is, you can't change the past. You can't change what 1 second ago or 10 minutes ago or 10 years ago. You just can't change it. So
right.
You have to keep looking forward. Use the past as your guide, as your wisdom maker. But don't look at it as a crutch. Don't look at it like, woe is me, woe is me. Look at my circumstances. Because there's millions and millions of people with much worse circumstances that are smiling and working hard to persevere and get to their goals. So none of this woe is me, I've been a victim, my parents this, my girlfriend that, my bank account this,
right.
Stock market, forget it. Forget it. I totally agree.
Yeah, I just call them, as you know, we always, you know how when you walk and you trip on a pebble and, you know, you just kind of like stub your toe, but then you'll trip again and you'll twist your ankle, but then you'll fall again and you'll break your hip. So, you know, you're going to continue to have these things until you get your leg back in alignment. So how much can you pay attention to get your leg back in alignment? And I think it's the same thing with optimism. If you walk around always saying, you know, oh, my breakfast stinks. Oh, my gosh, I'm late for work. Oh, I hate getting up in the morning. You know, already you're up to the broken hip length, right? And then you're going
exactly
and you're
right.
supposed to be affecting people at work. How can you have a, you know, reach your goals or be passionate about anything, I think, if you've already got that broken hip, the broken, you know, the twisted ankle and the stubbed toe? How can you do that?
Exactly. That's true. I mean, people, you know, when you think about this, you know, there is some accuracy to the whole law of attraction thing. And
right.
Yeah, if you wake up with that attitude of, oh, all these things, chances are you're going to have a lousy day. And you can look at that from so many angles. But the bottom line is, going back to the magnet, the whole thing about the magnet, it's you are going, if you're positive and uplifting, you're going to attract positive and uplifting. And then together, things will be good. Things will be fun. Things will be happy. But if you're negative or around negative, you're all going to wallow in self-pity. And it's nobody benefits from that. Not a thing. You know, you could easily complain you're having a problem. Go ahead and complain about it. But then immediately try to find the bright side. Well, I took a hit in that stock. Oh, that sucks. Well, I'll never buy that stock again. I'm going to buy this instead. Now I know better. I mean, there's so many ways you can flip. Flip a problem, and it's and I do that. I've been doing that since I was a kid. Maybe it's a gift, but I really find the bright side of everything, and I stick wholeheartedly to it to this day. And I talk to our staff about it. I talk to our interns about it. I talk to our audiences about it. Find the bright side. Just do it. That's the gratitude. Just find it.
Well, you know, and I think also, you know, I've grown up that way too. And one day something occurred to me. There was something going on with one of my sons, and I had set down the cell phone, and I immediately said, oh, my gosh, I feel so, you know, worried about it, blah, blah. And I felt my body curling forward, like we said before, curling forward, and I felt like this pit in my stomach. All of a sudden, within 2 seconds, I would say, I'll say, no, I'm going to feel grateful that he found help. I'm going to feel fabulous that he's on another path now, and I'm going to be grateful that things will be changing now. And that's it. And it's so much easier to just take that and flip it, because if you – and so many people do this. I'm worried, I'm worried, I'm worried. What I want you, and here's what I always do, is I always say to them, I want you to worry for the next 48 hours, and I want you to call me at the end of 48 hours. So set your time clock right now. They'll set their little buzzer on their phone. 48 hours, I want you to call me back, and I want you to constantly worry for 48 hours. They call me back, and I'll say, what did you get done in 48 hours? Well, I did what you told me. You wanted me to worry. I said, exactly, you got nothing done.
Get nothing done. Wow.
They could not get out of that enough. In other words, they couldn't come to that realization within that 40 hours that it might be an option for them to change that. So, with optimism. Yeah, with optimism, you really want to be able to flip that switch. You know, if I gave you that same assignment, you'd say, man, I'm sick of this after 6 hours. I'm sick of it, you know. I'm going to change it.
Right,
so,
exactly.
That's,
you know, Along those lines, I was talking to a friend of mine that was having an ongoing kind of fight with his girlfriend. He really cares about her. And he was finding that they disagreed on so many things, and he always felt he was on trial, constantly on trial, trying to answer her questions and go back and forth. And I said to him, you know, you guys have spent almost a year arguing, and what you do is all you do is defend yourself. Just let her say what she has to say, and just say, I understand, I disagree, but I understand, and just try to twist it into something nice and change the subject. But instead, the constant being defensive and having to win the battle, all it did was kill the relationship, kill it, kill it, kill it. And he's like, you know, I got to start doing that. He bites his tongue now, and he said it was the best few weeks since they started dating. And it's, you don't always have to win the battle. You don't have to win the battle. You don't have to be on trial.
And then also, too, sometimes you come to the realization that maybe these people or the job or the profession or your passion or whatever it is might not be that. It might be a little bit kink off. In other words, you could have a passion for growing organic food, but maybe you have a real dislike for getting up at 4 in the morning every day to go out and water before the hot sun, you know?
Right.
So then
right.
maybe you just need to find a different location to do it in. Go to a different state where you don't have to get up that early, where the sun might do it in the morning or whatever that might be. In other words, there are ways you can alter that which you feel is not working but still stay on your same path.
Exactly. Very good point. There's no question. There's always a way to achieve what you're trying to achieve without, you know, killing yourself. And, you know, if a wheel's already been invented, you can always make a better wheel. Don't be disappointed that you can't come out with the newest, latest, and greatest, because it doesn't work that way. There's so many things you could do, and you have to be flexible in your dreams.
Yeah, and don't be so self-defeating, huh?
exactly right. Like, I love what I do. What I do is probably the least amount of income for the most amount of, gain in terms of how I feel about myself and the world around me. I've never been happier. I did the same thing for 17 years before I did this. I've been doing this since 2010. I'm so happy. I mean, I'm extremely happy. And
it makes a huge difference.
Huge. You have to be flexible.
Yeah, and to not believe that which, and you know, sometimes people will say, well, this is what you were born to do. Mm-hmm. Well, hey,
right.
You don't have to always believe that. And it can change. I think, you know, you were meant to be this. You were groomed to be this. And I think that's almost like saying I've got a tattoo on my derriere and I can't get rid of it, you know?
That's so funny. Exactly.
Isn't it true?
It's so true. It's just so funny.
You know? And it's not an expression of my heart. It's just a tattoo on my derriere. So, sorry, see you later, you know? But... Well, David, you know, it's great having you with us. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of your events and everything that you have going on, about your book, your website, how people could find out more about you? Tell us a little bit
more
about
you. Sure, absolutely. You can learn more about us at contagiousoptimism.com. That's our main website. And we're more than just books. We're a brand, so we have live events which take place in Thousand Oaks, California, at the Civic Arts Plaza. Very similar to TED, we have amazing speakers, but it's more like real stories, real people, amazing inspirational stories mixed in with music and entertainment. We do that multiple times a year in Thousand Oaks. Probably in about 2 to 3 years, we'll start taking that around the globe, but we like growing it in this town for now. Our first book is out, the book that you have, Contagious Optimism. Our second book will be out around the holidays. It'll be 10 Habits of Highly Optimistic People, which is each chapter is a habit, and then within each chapter are people's stories and what they've done to persevere through whatever the habit is. And we are now collecting stories for our third and fourth book, which will be themed editions. The first one's going to be business stories, Contagious Optimism Business, silver lining stories through, you know, in commerce and industry. And our fourth is stories about people with disabilities. I recently was the keynote speaker at Miss Wheelchair USA, and it inspired me to create a book which is silver lining stories from people with disabilities and illnesses, paraplegics, quadriplegics, accident victims. Very excited about that. We have a clothing line which says "Pick it up, pass it on." Contagious optimism. All our money, by the way, all our royalties and profits of all our product lines are shared with charities and nonprofits. So our whole mission is altruistic, and we're very proud of that. Our Facebook page, which we're always looking for more fans, is Official Contagious Optimism, or people could follow us on Twitter at CO, as in Contagious Optimism, CO Live US. And that's how people can connect with us.
And what was your website again?
It's contagiousoptimism.com.
Very good. Well, David, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us. You know, I think, do you have somewhere on your website where you take submissions for those other books that you'll be having coming up?
You absolutely. If you go to our website and click on share uh-huh. your story.
Right.
It will connect people to us, and we will contact them with submission guidelines for whichever theme they want to share. Absolutely. We'd love that.
Sounds great. Well, David, it's been a pleasure to have you with us. I told you this show would just rock and roll. We don't even need to think about it, right?
No, it was great. I really appreciate it. Really
Very
it.
Good. Well, thank you so much for being with us, and please do come back with your new book, okay?
I will. Thank you for the invite.
Thank you. If you'd like more information about David Mezepal, his book is called Contagious Optimism. Please do check out on the bottom of today's show page, and you'll find a link directly to his website. It is uplifting stories and motivational advice for positive forward thinking. Let me tell you, you take this book, and don't be paranoid. It is a little bit big and hefty, but you put it on the side of your bed. And as I said before, you put your feet down on the ground, arms up to the sky, and just breathe in some air and be thankful you're there. Then you could pick up this book, and no matter where it opens to, read a page or two. Get your day started off on a great note. So you will find some contagious optimism in this book. You will find little stories. You will find little keynotes. There's a lot of things about commitment. There's things about effect and how you can be able to get things out there and feel better about how to practice that, what you actually preach. So thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure having you with us on Sedona Talk Radio and Blog Talk Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and have an absolutely wonderful day.